Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast, the only podcast that's brought to you live and indirect from Providence, Rhode Island, via Columbus, Ohio, the place that I call home. I, of course, am John Orlando. Welcome to episode 112. I hope that you're doing well out there. Man, oh man, I can't believe it's February. I mean, really, seriously, 50 degrees, 60 degrees, like it's, the weather is amazing. However, it's not so amazing if you have an ice rink in your backyard, but I digress. Enough about me complaining and ranting and raving about my failed project of having my own ice rink, but I don't know. You know what? Worst case scenario, if I only use it twice, which is all that I've managed to use it, it's two times so far. You know what? I just collapse it down, and I'll have the materials and have everything ready to go for next winter. And hopefully next winter, global warming will take a hike, and maybe we'll actually have some cold weather here in Ohio. But nonetheless, let's talk about this episode. My guest is a man that's been on this podcast many times. As a matter of fact, three previous times. So this makes number four for Mr. Brian Lau. And now you hear me talk quite a bit about Brian, and because I'm an advocate for what he's trying to do. He's got a graphic novel coming out called Staunch Ambition, and he's coming back on to talk a little bit about the Kickstarter that will be kicking off here momentarily here once the month of March rolls around. He's going to be kicking that off, which is only a few weeks away, so I wanted Brian to come on and talk a little bit about it. It's for the second part of his project, and I gotta tell you, I'm not blowing smoke. I'm not kissing up. I've seen a lot of great independent comic books, but Staunch Ambition, man, is really, really beautifully done. The artwork is amazing. Issue one was really, really good. Tyler Thall did an amazing job. And I know there's been some changes to some of the creative team, so to speak, for the second installment, which Brian will talk about. But I really wanted to give him a chance to come on here. You know, if you've never listened to the other episodes of Brian has appeared on, go back into the archive section and call them up. I honestly got to remember, I think 58, 68, and 90, I think, are the three different episodes that Brian has appeared on. But hey, just go over to the archive section. It's that easy. You can just scroll through them, listen to Brian talk about this project that he's had, quite frankly, in his head for like 15 some odd years, and he's finally making it happen. I'm happy that he's making it happen, and I'm glad to have him back on. I'm glad to be an advocate for this particular project, as I think I'm an advocate for all the projects of the individuals that come on to talk about them. But, well, nonetheless, let's get right on into it. I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and you know, on the other side of that break will be my conversation with Mr. Brian Lau.
Trivia Geeks, the Unpredictable Game Show podcast, is back with a brand new season. They've got a new host, new games, and a new day and time. But that's not all. Now you can download their companion app, TrivNow, and play along in real time. Watch Carrie on YouTube as she tries to convince her partner that his Dark Knight hasn't risen in years. Listen on Diamond Club and Alpha Geek Radio, Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. You can also follow the show on Facebook and Twitter and get all the latest updates and showtimes.
All right, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Sitting down here with Brian Lau. Brian, this is appearance number four.
Is it?
It four? Is.
Oh, it is. Wow, man. This seems like the first time with you.
Man, four. That I think, might start to tie a record, I believe. I believe there's two other gentlemen that have been on this podcast four times as a guest.
Nice. Well, I'm honored, man. I was excited to talk to you, having come to know you, and you were the first podcast I did for this book, so.
Well, and you know what? I appreciate that. And, you know, as I mentioned in the open, I like being an advocate for all the people that come on my podcast and talk about their projects. I like to be an advocate for not only you, but everybody, but certainly Staunch Ambition is quite a unique character in its own self. You just shared with me real quickly, I know this is an audio podcast, but the visuals, ladies and gents, that Brian sent of one of the interiors, breathtaking for issue two. And we'll talk all about issue two here in a minute, but let's maybe just recap it for some folks that are joining us for the very first time. They haven't listened to episode 58, 68, or 90. Those are your numbers, by the way. Those are your
appearances. Oh, yeah? Oh, cool. I got to play those, man.
58, 68.
Let me write those down.
58, 68, and 90.
Awesome. I'm winning the lottery. All right, man, I got to go. I'm independent wealthy.
Well, anyways, let's recap a little bit. What's a quick summary of the project, Staunch Ambition?
It's a supernatural sci-fi book that's supposed to take place like it could happen actually in our future. So it's the overall premise is that as we had the first enlightenment with science and technology, as it advances, we use science and technology and enter into the supernatural realm. And so the story is going to deal with the implications of that. Thus, my tagline, welcome to the new enlightenment. So we have the implications of entering the supernatural with some of the characters, Riel, Azarus, and Nimrod. So we're going to be getting issue 3 we're starting to write. So we're getting into their backstory, which is one of the most compelling parts of the reason I wanted to do this book. So, but that's the overall epic idea. And then Azarus is a genetically engineered worker clone, you know, spliced between human and animal DNA. Riel is a human supervisor on the space station, the Ambition, which thus the name Staunch Ambition. The Ambition is a space station in the story built by Staunch Industries. So we get into the backstory of Riel and who is she and who are her real parents is one of the plot devices there. So, and then Nimrod on this starts the whole show out in issue 1, an eccentric genius clone kind of whacked out and just starts the thing out with the action because he just... the crap hits the fan when he shows up. So,
okay, and I do believe too that you said that later on there's a little bit of mystery behind Staunch Industries as well. So there's a little bit of intrigue in there. So it's got a little bit of everything for the readers.
That's one of the implications of mankind entering the supernatural, right?
Okay, all right. So issue 1 has been out for a while.
Yes.
And let me ask, how's the feedback been for issue 1? Because I went to Facebook and I saw lots of positive comments.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of weird, you know. You're an independent creator, and then you start getting people like, you know, I have 2 original songs written for the book, and you get stuff either someone had listened to one of the songs, the main theme, an instrumental technical or electronic instrumental theme, while reading the book, and then had wrote, you know, not only enjoyed it, but you know, took the time to write me back and say that I loved it, and the music fit perfect, which will be in my trailer for my issue 2 Kickstarter. The first song I had in the first the alternative rock song I had in the first trailer for issue 1, and then the second trailer for issue 2 is going to have the other piece I had written based upon my melodies. But and then you get other fan mail or just people like, this is what's really cool, is when you're anxious to get issue 2 out, right? You're like, oh man, I got to let everybody know about it. One of the biggest hurdles is, you know, as an independent creator, is getting people to know about it. You know, there's a million people in the world that probably eat this up and love this, you know, genre and this concept, but they don't know about it or they have other things. So I have people writing me, hey, when's issue 2 coming out? And I'm like, oh, wow. And that's like... quite different, you know.
Yeah, so. Most definitely. Let's talk for a minute about the music. If you can refresh my memory, that's a band, a local band in your neck of the woods that wrote the original music, correct?
Well, there's 2 pieces. I'll start with the non-local. I scoured at the time. I had a couple melodies I always wanted to get produced, as we talked about before. But so I scoured Kickstarter looking for like Kickstarters where they offered to write music with you.
Okay.
And I found this group called Elements of Cadence, mm-hmm. you know, alternative rock group. So that was the one group that did something in California. Excuse me. And then Jason Conley, who is a local Michigan artist, and I'm mutual friends with him and some of his friends. Well, he was going to produce a video for me and whatnot. And so he took, I recorded some melodies for him. And then he just put together this beautiful electronic instrumental. So. And he just came out with an album not too long ago called Chemicals, and it's, you know, he's an independent Michigan creator,
mm-hmm.
and I couldn't recommend it anymore. It's top of the line, beautiful music, you know.
Has Michigan, have you gotten any buzz from some of the local media in your area up in Michigan about the Scotch ambition?
At the cons. I've been interviewed on like a Fox affiliate or something, you know, like the not the main news. But
like the morning show or something like that?
Yeah, some stuff like that here and there. So I've been networking and hitting the cons. But a lot of it is I'm just working on it and trying to live my life as far as, you know, I'm a father of five and I have a day job, of course. I work in Ohio, but I live in Michigan. So I'm trekking 8 hours on the weekends back and forth. So I wish I could really be out there just, you know, I'm not going to say pimping it because... What's the pro wrestlers use to promote them?
There you go.
Yeah, and I spend time promoting, of course, doing the social networks or, you know, obviously podcasts. But I'm gonna try to line up a few more celebrity maybe interviews or whatnot. Well, I've been working on.
I know that you were you had an appearance on the Motown Mojo Live radio show. So how did that go?
Yes.
How did that go?
Yeah, I was there with the Butts.
Yeah.
A local group in Michigan, and I forget the gentleman's name that was a boxing promoter for years and had met and worked with like Muhammad Ali and whatnot. So I was the little guest, you know, there. But that went great. Yeah, I got Mojo's poster up on the wall, and I'm planning on being on his show again as well. So he has a good variety of mix between sports, I think, and music and just local Michigan talent. So, yeah, and I'm going to be hitting, obviously, podcasts now that Issue 2 is coming out. So, you know, you are the first of Issue 2 podcasts.
All right.
So
there we go.
It kind of just worked out. Like, we didn't even plan that, but it worked out.
No, we didn't. We didn't. In full disclosure, you and I kind of missed each other at Christmas time because I wanted...
Yeah, New Year's.
New Year's time. Yeah, because I had this brilliant idea to have guests come on and talk about, you know, give me... like 3 minutes, 4 minutes of what you were thankful for or what you appreciate about 2016. I was gonna try to piece a bunch of them together, and I wasn't
on there because I wasn't thankful for anything. I couldn't come up with anything. So, anyways, go ahead.
Brian just says I created all of this because I am awesome and I'm not thankful for anything.
Wow, that's not that was a good idea. Did you roll that out?
I did not roll that out. You know why? Again, being 100% honest, I was like, yeah, I'll easily get 4 or 5 guys, and it'll be 4 or 5 guys, 15 minutes. I get and 2 guys, you and another creator got in contact with me, and I'm like, you know what? Right. I'm not going to do just 2 because
I spent most of my time just complaining.
So that got thrown out there, but then we started talking real quick, and you said that you were going to have the Kickstarter rolling out. So let's go ahead and talk about the Kickstarter. So what is the Kickstarter actually going to be for in terms of Issue 2?
It's going to be for the production of Issue 3 and the printing of Issue 2 and the production of Issue 3. So the first issue's Kickstarter was successful, and I used that money to go, and this isn't actually in my trailer, I explain, but this first Kickstarter funded the creation of Issue 2 and the printing of Issue 1, so the same thing goes for here. You know, it's a very costly production. The art and the artists I'm using are like, you know, it's not cheap, and so it's high quality, and I decided, you know, I'm gonna do this project. I'm gonna do it as best as I can, so not trying to cut any corners or make it any cheap. So that's what the Kickstarter is gonna be for Issue 2 too. But Issue 3 has started production, as I said, but that's just in the beginning, so I'm going to need some more money to fund that. So,
can we talk a little bit about the creative process since you're starting on Issue 3? So at this point right now, what are you involved in? Are you just scripting things out and just going through like a rough draft of what you expect? Or are you touching base with Irwin and Neil and the other creators and trying to piece a bigger picture or a fuller picture, so to speak?
Well, Irwin had contacted me. He's the layout artist, the penciler. on, you know, do I have any work for him in a little short dry spell, which usually he's busy. But so I had a sequence, a five-page sequence that I was very clear on how I wanted it to work out. So I kind of sent that to my new editor, who is Leah Lauderman. I had that edited, and then so I put those over, and Erwin started doing some layouts there. So we're not in any rush to get issue 3 done, right? Because issue 2's like just finished here, but we're chipping at it. But the overall writing of it has quite a bit of writing has been done, and I decided to bring Leah Lauderman on as a co-writer now. I was working with John McNichol, and John McNichol has a lot on his plate. He has like 8 kids. He's a teacher, and he just moved to a new state and all that. So Leah was very impressive. I heard her on another podcast, and she was very impressed, as you don't usually get editors interviewed. And she had a YouTube video that discussed, you know, how much she's into writing, and that's what her passion is. So I was very impressed with her. So we're going to be co-writing. So John and I put together a lot of issue 3, but there's a lot of stuff I want to change still and work out, and then she's throwing ideas at me as well. So, but I'm loving it. It's like I said, I don't know if I said this before the show, but the issue 3 is getting into the backstory of the characters. So this is really dear, near and dear to my heart. So
this is where you're going to get to the meat and potatoes of who is who and why they're the way that they are.
Right. I wanted to start the book out like, you know, a James Bond movie, or I wanted to start the story out like The Abyss, one of my favorite movies, or a Breaking Bad TV show, you know, where it just starts out where the shit hit the fan and you're like, what is going on,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, right.
So I just kind of focused on some scenario that's happening. And then now we got this, you get a little taste of the universe, some of the people in the midst of crap happening and things exploding. And then now we're going to get into some of their personalities and their backstory.
Well, let's talk a little bit too, because I'm sure that we probably talked about this the last time you were on, which, you know, like I said, was almost about a year ago. Episode 90 was in April. You did have a change from issue 1 to issue 2 in terms of your penciler and the inks. Tyler Fall was moving on to another project, correct? And do you want to talk a little bit about the change over there?
Yeah, Tyler's very dedicated and into the concept art for video games and movies. So I had Erwin working with me during the preview issue, actually.
Okay.
So Erwin was doing some pencils and colors. And to alleviate some of the workload for Tyler, I was like, well, why don't we just have Erwin do the layouts and then you color them?
That's Erwin Arosa, correct?
Yeah, Erwin Arosa. Magnificent artist. He does a book, another successful Kickstarter, Gridian, which is a graphic novel, which is like, like a Game of Thrones kind of a like vibe, but maybe not rated R. So, well, actually, I don't know. That book starts out insane, and his artwork is magnificent. It's great. So, but Irwin's doing pencils for me now, and then Tyler had recommended me a guy named Neil Anderson, who's working. He has a similar style, and he's doing the colors over Irwin's work. And Neil Anderson's working on another successful book, Kickstarter book, beautiful book called The Chasing Arrows, which is a futuristic world where it's kind of dealing with like the Earth's natural resources and recycling and just this dystopia future whatnot. So, but his colors, as you saw, I sent you his cover to issue 2, and the page, interior pages, are just magnificent. I mean magnificent, so.
Yes.
I got three new people for a match.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was going to say, Neil's colors are not only just magnificent, but they're really hard to describe. They're meticulous, I guess, would be another good adjective to use. They're so on point that it's ridiculous.
Well, he could do anything. I mean, he'll do a million styles, non-comic book and fine art to whatnot. And some of the meticulous is coming through from Erwin's pencils because, you know, Neil stays true to the pencils. But this brings them alive with just, you know, the depth of color. And, you know, and you can make the distinctions between the, you know, that pencils are meticulous, but you just get more depth when you add color to it, right? You know, so.
Yeah. Let's go back real quick about the Kickstarter, because I don't think we talked. When is the target date for the Kickstarter to be released?
I'm launching the Kickstarter March 3rd on Friday. So that's a lot of work putting a Kickstarter together. Stressful. I don't. Have you talked to a lot of creators about Kickstarters together?
I will tell you right now, it is a house divided when you mention Kickstarter.
In what regard?
Some guys absolutely have no problems putting together Kickstarters. It's not a problem.
Really?
Yeah. Other.
What the frick are these people? Are they from this planet?
I don't know.
I guess that tells you where I'm at on this.
Well,
spectrum.
You know, yeah, and then there's other guys that find it daunting. That absolutely daunting. I know that I talked to Jack Wallace a couple of episodes ago, a creator here in Columbus. Disposable Fiction Comics, by the way, is his brand. I'm just gonna throw it out there, and he finds it very frustrating and very anxious and very stress inducing and that. But I've talked to other guys that it's you know they find it a tad bit, you know, tricky in that, but it's no big deal. They don't dread it. But so it's really, I guess, you know, it's a house divided, as I said. That's the best way to describe it.
So the one side's lying and the other side's being honest. Okay, I got how it works.
Yeah, well, maybe. Because
part of the Kickstarter. No, look, it is what it is. You know, I'm putting together something, and if people can look at it and appreciate it, then that's what really matters. So, but the Kickstarter is a lot of work. I mean, you know, the videos, to put a video together, it's important. So to do a good video and then to, this is what I worked on for 3-4 days, the rewards, okay?
Yeah.
So you, not only do you got to figure out what rewards you want to have and the prices and whatnot, but you've got to figure out, like, what you have. And so, like, for my first Kickstarter, I did a limited run, numbered issue, exclusive Kickstarter book only through Kickstarter. So people could only get that book through Kickstarter, you know, which makes sense. But I did it numbered. So now, you know, I have some of those left. And, of course, I'm going to offer issue one, the exclusive Kickstarter, through the second issue Kickstarter. And so then you have to figure out, okay, I have these numbers left, and then I got to figure out which rewards to put them in and how many do I have. And then you have the next issue two. You got to do something with a variant cover and whatnot. And so, and then I got good news for issue two and issue one. I messaged Freddie Williams, who did my cover to issue one, who works for has worked for Marvel and IDW and DC. You know, he's a very established, great artist. And Koi Pham, who did my preview cover, who works for Marvel, Disney, and now is working for DC. Magnificent artists. You know, I got them on to help, you know, promote the book. Well, anyways, I messaged them, and they said that they would sign. You know, I'm going to mail them, a chunk of books, and then they're going to sign them.
Oh, that's cool.
And so I'm going to offer those through Kickstarter. So then I have a limited amount of how many books I have that are signed by me and Neil and Tyler, you know, because, you know, I haven't made them guys sign everything. And then I have a limited amount that's signed by all of us with Freddie and with Koi. So you got to, it's like calculus, man. I have to figure out what to charge and when to put it in what tier and how many I have to do this. And if I put so many here, then how many am I going to have here? And oh my gosh, dude, it is insane.
Sure, sure. And I imagine you don't want to do it. I imagine you're like me, you wouldn't want to do the same rewards over and over again. You want to mix it up a little bit, because I think, you know, especially if you get a following, you know, folks that are like, yeah, I like book one, here's book two, but I don't want the same, you know. And I can see where that's very, very, very daunting.
Yeah, it's, you know, and there's a whole obviously strategy to what do people want and what do you offer, and then, you know, and so you got to do research on that, and then you've got to, you know, do the visuals to present it. You know, you got to come up with it. So, you know, I'm getting through that. I'm almost done with that, and so I have the videos done, and the rewards are almost all there. And Freddie just sent me. I asked Freddie, I'm like, could you send me some pictures of you signing the books? And he's got pictures from the left signing them, from the right, straight on. He's holding two copies up, you know, and then he's got a picture of all the books that he signed on a table just lying perfectly next to each other. So you know, it's all proof that, hey, I signed these. You know, it wasn't, you know, I didn't pay somebody off the street to do it.
Yeah. Well, that's so great that you have those two gentlemen to help you out. You know, Freddie Williams is obviously a name in modern comics that is certainly getting some buzz, and Koi Pham has been around for a while, because I think I remember him, ooh, geez, what, eight years ago, still doing stuff, you know, or starting out. So it's good to have two guys, you know, on your team, so to speak.
Yeah, man, and Koi had chipped in and did a couple rewards for, you know, personal sketches for the first Kickstarter. So yeah, having them sign the book is something that I don't even have yet. So I threw a few in there that, you know, so I can have my copies signed.
Yeah, gotcha. Well, you also have T-shirts. Yeah. I saw you have T-shirts.
Yeah, I have a GIF that kind of cycles through about 8 designs, and then I'm like sitting there the other day, and I'm thinking, I didn't do a T-shirt based upon issue 2's cover.
Oh,
it's magnificent. So last night I was working on that to add that to the T-shirt. So I think I have about 9 T-shirt designs.
How's been the reaction to the T-shirts?
T-shirts don't fly off the shelf. But what, you know, when you get somebody who really likes what you're doing and whatnot, I mean, that's the greatest honor, is that not only they want to buy a shirt, but they want to promote you, you know.
And I'll tell you right now, speaking with a lot of independent comic book creators, I don't think T-shirts is something that I've run across.
Really?
Yeah, in terms of guys promoting themselves, you know, stickers, you know, little postcards, stuff like that. Keychains, that type of stuff, but T-shirts is something, I got to be honest, Brian, have not seen.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I promote, you know, or I support Kickstarters too, you know, and I buy them, and I like postcards and all that, but I'm just not like, ooh, a postcard.
Right.
I got to get that. I mean, yeah, I want it if you have it, but it's not like I want that postcard because it's a postcard. Stickers, whatnot, you know, I was into stickers like in the 5th grade. Well, so I love those.
Let's add,
but yeah, T-shirts are cool. You
know? Are the T-shirts like made to order? So in other words, somebody. Okay, so. All
right. Yeah. That's the new printing technology, which actually I was a little skeptical of, but it's actually better than the offset print or the screen or silk screening.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously there's differences, and so some people might like silk screening, but it's actually doesn't fade and it's stretchable. You know, the silk screening can like chip and crack and over time and stuff. So I was happy to hear that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and you don't have to order like, you know, pre-order, you know, larges and smalls, and then you're out of this size or that size. So.
And you have a box in your garage, you know, that still has T-shirts in it.
Yeah, I'm selling Staunch Ambition rags. Does anybody anybody want any Staunch Ambition rags?
If you have to dust your living room, just use a Staunch Ambition dust rag. There you go.
This looks like it used to be a T-shirt. No. These are quality rags.
Oh, man. Well, let's talk here for a moment about the circuit of cons that you've done, because you were up at Monroe Comic Con, and I forget some of the other ones that you did. Are you still planning on going back to C2E2 this year?
I'm not sure if I'm going to go with it as a table or whatnot. I submitted for a table, but they're huge, and they put me on a waiting list. So that's a very expensive trip.
Yeah.
And I love it. It's a beautiful con, but we'll see. If I don't get a table, I'm not even sure I might. I would love to go to it just for a Saturday and just network and just, you know, enjoy the show. But looking forward to doing Motor City, which is my hometown.
Yep.
Monroe again, so I have that lined up, and I'll be signing up for several more once now that I know, you know, I got issue 2 coming out, so.
Okay. It has you've had a pretty good experience, though, at the cons, if I remember correctly. And again, just kind of recapping from previous episodes, we talked a little bit about your experience at C2E2 and at Motor City and whatnot. You've had a very positive experience at those cons, correct?
It depends on the con. I mean, it's positive because you get to meet at least certain amount of people or whatnot. But I tell you what, man, there's some cons where it's brutal. I mean, I've done cons where, you know, I haven't sold one book for one of the days. And it's like, you know, I took a day off of work and I'm like standing here. And, you know, it's, but it all depends. I can never really tell. But a lot of the cons are actually good for networking, even if you don't sell. But yeah, once I had issue one out, the cons turned, you know, everything changed, you know, now that, you know, because I was concerned being independent, you know, so I came out with a preview issue and I actually hit a few cons with just a preview issue just to get the book out there and the story. And then, of course, when you got issue one out there, yeah, everything went like, you know, tenfold. So now that I got issue two coming, I kind of stepped back from the cons a little bit. Here and so I'm gonna just go out and start hitting cons big time now with issue one, two, and preview issue. So, yeah, the cons are fun. I wish I could do more, and I wish I could travel across the country and do it. But it's a tough gig because you got to pay for the table, travel.
Yep.
And if I'm selling a book, $5 a book, okay, it costs you two something just to print the book. That's only to print the book.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're talking two something to print it, not even considering what it costs to make the book, mm-hmm. you know, production. So, you know, you go in and even if you make your table money back, you have you really made it back because you sold, you know, a certain amount of money? Is it, could, you know, did you outdo what you cost to print it? So it's tough, man. Tough being independent and getting out there. But I just started out. So, you know, I mean, I've been doing it for what? How long you said? A year? 2 years?
I'm glad that you asked me.
I don't remember. I think I did this. I was born doing this, but yeah. But I have issue one out, so you know things are going good, and I'm getting got a lot of good feedback. But it's a slow burn, dude.
Have you always been interested in science fiction? As even as a kid, did you enjoy science fiction movies and science fiction books, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I wasn't like just nuts about sci-fi only, but I look back on it and, you know, I was always into the art as a kid, drawing and stuff. So my brother's a huge geek and he had the comic books laying around. So that was a natural draw for me. But yeah, I look back and in the, you know, I fond memories of like the Incredible Hulk TV show or Battlestar Galactica, of course, Star Wars and
did you see Rogue One? I presume.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All
yes,
right. Let's just dive into that real quick. Did you like it? Yes or no?
I actually liked Rogue One better than I liked The Force Awakens.
Yeah, I did too. I did too.
Oh wow! Good deal.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, I really.
That's why we get along so well? I tell you, I thought it was better. Yeah.
Yeah, I did too. I did too. Not that I hated A Force Awakens.
It was good.
But it just, I think they played it safe. In Force Awakens, I'm just that. That's how I feel. They played it safe. We're gonna keep it kind of similar to New Hope, but we're gonna give you some new characters with a little bit of depth, a little bit of action. I think this one, which I was a little bit afraid of, I said, and in fact, I just, I don't know, 3 or 4 episodes ago, I sat down with my local resident in-house movie critic, Paul Markov. We talked about it, and I had said that I had reservations about it prior to. Seeing it, you know, in the summer, last summer, I was like, I don't know about this. But, man, I couldn't be more incorrect.
Well, that was part of the reason I think you and I enjoyed it is because it's like, well, expectations were not that high.
True.
Huge expectations for The Force Awakens.
True.
You know, that was the relaunching of the misfired Star Wars relaunch with the prequels. But, no, J.J. Abrams did a great job on The Force Awakens, except totally fell flat on the most epic thing that should have happened in the Star Wars universe ever, Han Solo's death. That should have been... Han Solo is one of the greatest sci-fi, one of the great characters in major motion pictures. And his death... didn't pull anything, no heartstrings for me, nothing. It was just flat, and that should have been epic. I mean, so if you're gonna have him die off, you know, that should mean something. The ending for Rogue One was actually meant something.
Yeah.
I mean, I cared more about the robot dying in Rogue One than I cared about Han Solo's death.
Right, right. I think that
some robot I just met.
Yeah, I think the I think Han Solo's death was predictable. Like I called it a mile away.
That too.
You know?
But,
yeah, and I think that that's what lessens it. Yeah, I liked Rogue One because, and I know that I have heard some people say, well, the characters weren't well developed. Okay, well, it's a standalone story. I don't think that, you know, and now that we see that everybody dies at the end, did you really need him to be real three-dimensional?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few areas they could have developed, like the relationship between, what's the female, the main female character?
Jen and Cassian.
And her, you know, adoptive father.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's things they could have developed, but I mean, come on, man. The characters were actually cool, intriguing, and they served the purpose they needed, and then this overall story worked. I mean, yeah, it wasn't the greatest character-driven story, but it was good.
It was good. I liked it, too. And I'm,
good, I, great I, action.
Yeah, and I snickered when you said new characters, interesting ones, because I've said an 8-year-old John would have went just absolute batshit crazy if, in A New Hope, there was like a blind kung fu master Jedi like guy, because that dude was awesome. I'm like, oh my god, I would have blown. I just would have went bonkers. Like that dude would have been the coolest dude ever. You know?
Yeah, that sequence. That was one of the cool action sequences where he takes out all the stormtroopers.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have that climax with the Darth Vader's short little sequence was just.
Yeah.
That actually, like you said, what did you say? 8-year-olds. That took me back.
Yeah.
To the awe and wonder of Star Wars as a child.
Yes. Yeah. Overall, you know? I liked it. What about, is there any other science fiction flicks that you like?
Well, what's funny is I'm not a horror fan. You know, I don't like particularly drawn toward horror. But
same.
The horror, Well, the horror that I do like is The Thing or Aliens. Yeah, there's some sci-fi like that, Prometheus or Blade Runner. I mean, I love all the great sci-fi that's been done, but I think sci-fi could be like the Sci-Fi Channel. My friend the other day had suggested, has Sci-Fi Channel ever came up with anything good? And I was like, we had to remind him the Battlestar Galactica series was amazing. It's just, that was one of my favorite shows. The revisiting of the Battlestar Galactica. And so, but yeah, if you turn that channel on, there's so much crap, man. It's like low budget, or and it's even okay, forgivable if it wasn't so stupid.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I think a lot of people don't like sci-fi. Think about that crap. And
oh, most definitely, I agree with you in horror. My taste in horror is the much more subtle, suspenseful horror.
It's gotta have substance.
You're right. Like Halloween. Halloween, the original one, is phenomenal to me. Like that's a great horror film. I don't care for the modern day blood, guts, everything. You know,
right.
To me, that's not horrific to me. I think Hitchcock said something, and I'm gonna paraphrase it. Like the biggest horror is the knife you don't see.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
To me, yeah, that's why I think I'm not a huge fan of.
And I'm a big Hitchcock fan as well, but so I saw Ex Machina, which was kind of horrific in certain respects, but that was a great movie.
That was a very good movie. I liked it.
Acting, production.
Yeah, I liked that the ending was a little bit kind of ambiguous. It was very Blade Runner-like. Was she real, or was she a real person, or was she a robot? That's a great science fiction one. I got to be honest, I think one that is coming out soon that I have really no background with it, but it's stunning to look at. Ghost in the Shell that's coming out.
Yeah, I saw the original anime, and I was really late to the game to see that, the anime original. Did you see that?
I've never seen it. I've never seen it.
So, the problem with me was that I saw The Matrix. And, of course, that blows you away.
Sure.
A magnificent movie in its own right. Well, it borrows from Ghost in the Shell. So, I think I've seen Ghost in the Shell after The Matrix. And so, you know, and I hear how much of a classic it is. And so, I didn't get blown away, but it was pretty much a pioneer in certain aspects. So, what do you think? Yeah, the new Ghost in the Shell?
I would probably catch it because I think it looks just visually beautiful. I mean, for that science fiction setup. It's just visually appealing to me, even though I don't know anything about the story. I think maybe when I was a kid, I got a, like, you know how when you're a kid, somebody goes, "Eat this," like Brussels sprouts, and you eat them, you go, "Ugh." You know, and maybe
someone like your mom.
Yeah, so maybe like later.
Or just like people who come up to you randomly, eat this Brussels sprout.
In my neighborhood, it was weird, man. Sometimes it happened. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay, it was your mom then.
Yeah, there were like Brussels sprout dealers on the corner. Like, hey, kid, come here.
Eat this Brussels sprout.
First one's free, man. Now,
first one's free. Oh man, he's got these kids hooked on Brussels sprouts. Yeah, that's a tough area you grew up in.
Yeah, I know.
Jeez.
Anyway, but you know what I mean? Like, you get the bad first experience. And that was mine with anime. Like, I watched an anime movie called Project Aiko. And so off the wall. Again, batshit crazy. I was like, what am I watching? And this was, like, in high school. And I'm like, I don't get it. And, like, the guy that was showing it to me, isn't this awesome? I'm looking at him going, no.
Nah, not getting it. I'll tell you what, I've never gotten into anime, and I want to revisit. I want to correct something I said about the Ghost in the Shell. It's a magnificent movie, the original anime. Okay, so I just came to it late, and the art and the visuals are magnificent. I wasn't blown away by it, but we got a lot of cool sci-fi kind of things coming up. We got Blade Runner relaunch, a new movie, and we have another Alien movie to hopefully make sense of Prometheus, because even though that movie was great, I was really kind of disappointed in certain aspects because I didn't understand so many things. So I always was saying I would leave my judgment for Prometheus based upon the next movie, and this movie's supposed to kind of fill in some of the blanks, hopefully. So I'm really looking forward to that. That trailer is crazy. Creepy. Looks creepy.
And of course we can't forget about Star Wars is coming out again, another installment. This would be,
the Han Solo?
No, I believe episode 8's coming out relatively
before
soon.
The Han Solo?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, you might know more than I do,
think
but...
so. But I'm excited for that because I'm Rian Johnson, the director, I'm a big fan of his. And speaking of science fiction, his film Looper was really well
done. I've never
done.
Seen that yet. It's and really well that's done. The time travel one, right, yeah. With Bruce Willis?
Yes, and it's really well done, and I really liked it. And cool. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, I think J.J. Abrams, if you give him any credit, he just opened it up in a great way to set up for another Empire Strikes Back, right? So you had the first Star Wars, magnificent, but then Empire Strikes Back was just amazing. So hopefully, no pressure, but hopefully this next movie will just be about as amazing as Empire Strikes Back. That's all. Come on.
You know what?
What's your problem?
Yeah, no simple pressure. Speaking of which, I just picked up the first, it's a giant, Marvel's putting out collections of the old 70s Star Wars comic books. Yeah, they are.
I thought you had the old, like, 70 movies.
No. The old comics.
I was like,
did.
Dang. Yeah, who's buying that? No. So all the Star Wars now, this is the biggest, coolest thing in those. Why don't you guess? What was the coolest kind of concept in those original Star Wars comic books?
To me, as a kid. Yeah, it was the characters that did not exist in the film.
Okay, I was going with a prop or something that you would imagine being used in a movie.
Oh, that's a good one, Brian. I don't know.
I'll say what it was.
Okay.
The lightsaber whip. So one of the characters, female characters, had a lightsaber whip, and as a kid, I was like, how in the world? Wow, a lightsaber whip. And so, how come we've never seen that on screen?
Okay, you got me on that one, because I don't know if I have... Well, I do, because I have the big giant collection. Like, they're putting out the collections, like... I think it's like... Well, I have it over here, if I could dig it out.
What'd you say? Was it in the 70s, your collection?
Yeah, it's from the late 70s, early 80s, when Marvel started putting them out. And so they're like... I think they're 18 issues in a collection, hardback collection. So I just picked those up, because I have some of the miscellaneous issues... Which, as a kid, I enjoyed because they had different characters that weren't in the film.
No, yeah, so for sure. Like, especially a lightsaber whip character.
Right, exactly. Like a...
That wasn't in the film, was it?
No.
No. Right. Yeah. Maybe well, you'll enjoy that.
Maybe in the rated X version. I don't know.
Crap. Okay. And you plead innocence on that, not knowing. Good. So, yeah, but I tell you what, I read a few of those when I was a kid and, you know, fascinated with Star Wars. And then I always dreamed as a kid of imagining what that lightsaber whip would be like. So I just don't think that would be practical, though. It probably works in a comic book, but if you try to actually realize that in real life, like, you would be, you know, one mishap with that and, you just messed up your whole crew.
Yeah. It's like
you misplace your lightsaber whip.
It's like a combination of Star Wars, Indiana Jones. The best of both worlds.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So what do you got? You said how many of them?
It's a giant collection. It's a giant collection. Oh, you know what? When we go off air, I'll dig it out here real quick because I don't want to bore the listeners at home going, great, John's leaving.
No, let's read them. No. break it out and let's start reading them, man.
A dramatic interpretation?
How does a lightsaber whip sound, actually?
I don't know. That's a good question. Right. Hey, but real quickly, as we start to wrap the things up here, if Staunch Ambition becomes a movie,
ooh.
Who would you cast in the...
You mean if? Rephrase that.
When Staunch Ambition becomes a movie.
Yeah, because I've already been working on this.
Who are you casting?
Well, you know, I've dreamed of that a little bit. And, I don't know. I kind of thought about Michael Fassbender as Azarus because that guy is a badass actor.
He
is just well-rounded. I couldn't believe. Actually, what was weird though, even though he can do so much, he was in that new Assassin's Creed movie, and it was kind of weird to see him as this like main action star. But he could do anything. So I kind of thought, you know, someone like Michael Fassbender, but. Who's in the new Ghost in the Shell, maybe?
That's Scarlett Johansson, I believe.
Yeah, maybe her as Riel, or I don't know. Who do you think what would be good for Riel?
Oh, I get to cast? Ooh.
What do you think? Who should we pick for Riel?
I'm going to go with Malin Ackerman.
Who's that? What is that? I'm not knowing
she
that.
She was the Silk Spectre in Watchmen.
Oh,
she was also
her.
In that comedy Couples Retreat with Vince Vaughn. She's done a variety of different things.
She fits, yeah, she fits. Like
that's
she
who I
looks
would.
Like
that's you. Exactly. You put me on the spot. That's the first one that would pop in my mind that I think would be a good role.
Give her a call, then find out. We'll start with her, and then talk to Scarlett afterwards.
Okay,
We should start with Scarlett afterwards.
Okay, hold on. I'll get my secretary to get on that. Okay.
Your secretary? Yeah.
Tell Joanne to get on that right away. So.
All right. Good.
Anyways, Brian, let's let the fans know where can they get in touch with you on the interwebs, as the kids say.
So if you type in Staunch Ambition in Google, you can find anything. But basically, I have my website, www.staunchambition. If anyone's not familiar with the spelling, it's S-T-A-U-N-C-H, kind of like launch with an S-T. And then Ambition, A-M-B-I-T-I-O-N. So I'm on Facebook under Staunch Ambition, Twitter, Instagram. You know, I have my website. So basically everything's connected through there.
There you go. One-stop shop. You just go there. And by the way, I'll say it now, and I'm probably going to say it again at the end. There's a link on the homepage of yours truly, pbdcast.com. Just go to the links page. You can just find Brian right there. Staunch Ambition's right there.
And if no one's familiar with certain listeners aren't familiar with the book, at least just, you know, check it out. Try to see, you know, see what the quality is. And, you know, I'm putting so much work and time into this, but I'd appreciate it if you checked it out and gave it a chance to see if it would win you over as far as the quality.
There you go. Well, Brian, thank you for coming on, man. I appreciate it. It's always good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, it was fun, man. Fun geek time.
All right, I'm going to throw it to a quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up this episode. So if you will, please stick around. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Mr. Brian Lau. You know, I always enjoy having Brian come on. It's always a fun, easygoing discussion with him. His book, Staunch Ambition, is really good. As I mentioned before in the intro, you know, I like to be an advocate for every project that these individuals come on to talk about, and Brian is certainly no different. You need to just go on over to staunchambition.com. There's a link over on the links tab on pvdcast.com where you can go right to his website and check out the artwork and grab a copy, man. Grab a copy of number one or maybe the preview issue. Brian, you know, is putting out there a great book. It's not only entertaining, but it's also top quality. And, you know, obviously you got from our conversation that that's important to him. He has a top quality book out there that's also entertaining. So definitely check it out. Staunch Ambition is worth your while. So, all right, with that being said, usually it's this time of the podcast where I tell you about something I think is cool, something I think you should check out, something I think is noteworthy. Oh, yeah. It's time for Orlando's Fave! But, unfortunately, it's going to be a double-barrel edition of Orlando Hates. Now, for those of you that are new to the podcast, Orlando Hates is the opposite of Orlando's Faves. That's right. Every once in a while, there's something that bothers me so much that I just got to rant about it. I just got to yell about it. I just got to complain about it, whatever you want to say. Whatever verb you want to use, that's what I got to do when it comes to Orlando Hates. And there's the first part. As longtime fans of this podcast, you know I love hockey. And I just read a story that the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, New York, is kicking out the New York Islanders after this season. Why, you ask? Because of low attendance. Because they can, quote, make more money, end quote, on events and concerts and whatnot. How dare you, Barclays Center? How dare you? Now, I am no Islanders fan. I am not. But they left their other home out in Uniondale to come to the Barclays Center a couple seasons ago. They've had a bad season this year, partly because they lost some very key people. They had lost some folks that went to free agency. Whose fault is that? That's the general manager's fault. They fired their coach recently. Again, I think that that was not a very wise move. And now they get possibly thrown out of their home. It's sickening. It's absolutely sickening. The Islanders are a historic franchise in the NHL, and they should be treated with a little more respect, Barclays Center. How dare you? Yeah, you know what? I hope they go back to Uniondale. I hope they have a great, great couple of seasons. And in the meantime, Barclays Center, maybe your attendance for Nets games goes into the dumper. How about that? But now I'm going to give you the second installment of Orlando Hates. I like movies, you know that. But I gotta say that I just watched a movie that was a Oscar contender, and actually an award winner. And I just don't get it, man. I just don't get it. I watched The Revenant last weekend. I just don't get it. I don't get what's so great about that film. I mean, it was beautifully shot. Tom Hardy was excellent in it. But overall, I just got really sick and tired of the story, man. How many accidents can one guy have and still survive? Crying out loud. I just really wasn't into it. Plus, it was 2.5 hours long. It could have been could have been 2 hours. That's my second installment for Orlando Hates. I really wanted to like the movie, but it just fell flat for me. So, I know that second one didn't have as much hate and vigor and angst to it, but I'm passionate about my hockey, man. I'm a hockey traditionalist, you know? That's why I'm not a big fan of this stupid Las Vegas franchise. But again, I'll digress because I want to wrap up this podcast. So I won't get started. I won't get on that soapbox. So anyways, all right, let me tell you where you get in touch with me, ladies and gentlemen, where you can give me your 2 cents worth. You might tell me, John, I didn't like Orlando Hates. I want Orlando's Faves. I know very infrequently they happen, but I felt I needed to get that off my chest. But nonetheless, maybe you want to tell me that you thought this episode was great. Maybe you want to tell me it's lousy. You can do that 3 different ways. First of all, you could shoot me an email, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can hit me up on Twitter @pvdmvp. And of course, you can contact me through the Facebook page. And that is, of course, facebook.com/pvdcast. There are 5 different ways in which you can get this podcast, which you probably already know that because you're listening right now. But you can go to pvdcast.com for it. You can go to iTunes. You can go to Google Play. You can go to Stitcher. And you can go to SoundCloud. Any of those ways. And you can listen to this podcast. And again, whatever one's easiest for you, do it, man. But no matter which way you do it, let somebody know. All right? Spread the word. Spread the gospel of John Orlando and the PVD cast. All right? All right, with that, I'm going to get on out of here. So I want to thank each and every one of you for listening, and I will chat at you later.